Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. I often get sent stories that I don't normally use because I'm not really fond of the typical let's not meet format of scary stories. But I figure I have all these stories laying around, I might as well read them. So today, I'll be sharing some allegedly true, creepy stories that were sent in to me by viewers just like you. Now to preface this, most of these are not going to be supernatural or have cryptids or anything like that. They're more of like the everyday horrors you could run into in your everyday life. If you have a story you would like to share, whether it's one of these types of stories, a supernatural story, or something else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Stories like yours that keep this channel going. Now, let's get into these creepy stories that are allegedly true. From viewers just like you. I'm a 25-year-old woman, and I've been living in Japan for a few years now. It's a beautiful country. Every bit as fascinating and alien as I imagined. But I do have one major complaint. In rural areas, where foreigners are a rarity, Japanese men can become a little bit obsessive when it comes to foreign girls. Especially fair-haired, blue-eyed girls such as myself. I've dealt with quite a few situations where I was way beyond uncomfortable. Even one or two where I feared I might be abducted or worse. One such encounter took place a few years back when I was in a third year of my university course. The following was a very brief encounter, but a terrifying one nonetheless. I was studying abroad at a school in Saitama, essentially a suburb of Tokyo, being only 15 miles or so away from the capital city center. I was meeting a lot of new people, making a lot of new friends, and getting to really practice my Japanese and generally having the time of my life. One day, after classes were finished, my friends invited me to go shopping with them at a local supermarket to get things for a nabe party. For those who don't know, nabe is basically a potluck dinner kind of thing. You get some fresh vegetables and cuts of meat, and then you put a big pot on a little gas burner before everyone gathers around and eats together. It's a huge part of traditional Japanese culture, and a great way to socialize. I was over the moon when they invited me. I was usually left out of these kinds of things at first because I was an outsider, whereas they had known each other since their freshman year. Though, over the few months that we had been singing together, they'd grown to like me as like a family member. Each one like an overprotective big brother. Especially a guy named Shinji. He was short and a bit on the heavy side, but he was extremely charismatic. Whenever he saw me fumbling around, nervous or confused, he'd quickly appear by my side and throw a heavy arm around my shoulder asking, "What's the problem, Jamie-chan?" We all went to our friend's house for the party, and ended up drinking and talking and being up pretty late. I checked my phone at one point to discover that it was already like 4 in the morning. Not only that, but my battery was dying. The guys have already decided they were going to sleep for a few hours until the train started back up, but I was only about a 30-minute walk away from my shared apartment. I announced that I was leaving and started packing my stuff up. Sinji offered to walk me home, but I politely declined the offer. It would be sunrise soon and it really wasn't all that far. I made it to the station safely, only to see a single parked car outside with a man I didn't recognize leaning up against it. He was staring at me. He was much older than me, in his mid-30s or early 40s if I had to guess. His head turned, watching me as I approached the station. I began to pick up my pace a little, crossing to the other side of the street to avoid him as best as I could. But I heard the car door slam and the engine start up. Headlights illuminated me and turned to drive alongside where I was walking. His window rolled down. "Good morning, Gaijin," he said in Japanese. Gaijin, meaning foreigner. "You are walking alone?" "No, I am meeting with friends soon," I replied politely. "My word, you speak very good Japanese. Where are you going?" I started walking faster, pretending not to hear his last question. "You're very beautiful. Can I get your phone number?" he asked. "I have a boyfriend." It was a lie, but I didn't know what else to say. He then proceeded to drive, and I figured he'd given up. But he suddenly pulled his car just ahead of me before he opened the driver's door and got out. "Let's go home together," he repeated, a little more vehemently, taking a few steps toward me on the sidewalk. I panicked, immediately sprinting into a nearby park. There were only a handful of entrances and exits, all of which a car could not enter thanks to some well-placed bollards. I pulled out my phone, immediately calling Sinji. Just my luck, though, he didn't answer. He was probably passed out, still drunk on weak Japanese beer. I tried the rest of my group, but no one seemingly was answering. I looked at the next exit, just in time to see his car crawl by slowly. He was still searching for me. Trembling in fear, I tried again and again, with no success to reach the guys. Just as I was about to cry, my phone lit up dimly with a phone call from Sinji. "What's the problem, Jamie-chan?" he said jokingly. I'd never been so glad to hear those words. In a flurry of words, I explained to him that I was potentially in serious trouble. Though he didn't say a word the entire time, I could practically hear the smile leave his face. In a tone so serious it was almost weird to hear it coming from him, he told me to stay where I was and that he was on his way. But I was already 20 minutes away from him. I wasn't sure that I had 20 minutes before the guy parked his car and came to look for me on foot. I looked behind me again, just in time to see him drive by the exit slowly. Looking through, "I don't have time. I'm going to make a break for it. Next chance I get," I explained. "No," he said. "Wait for me. I can run and be there." But Sinji wasn't a runner, not by any stretch of the imagination. There was absolutely no way he could get there any faster than I could. He started to say something more, but my phone suddenly went dark. Dead battery. No turning back now. I waited a few seconds and there he was, right on schedule. He crawled by the exit, then stopped, waiting for his moment to pounce. My heart was pounding so hard I could hear it thumping in my chest. The sun was starting to come up now and he had a better view. It really was now or never. He slowly moved forward. I crept out of my hiding spot and moved toward the exit. I poked my head out and saw him turn the corner. I sprinted toward my house and didn't look back. I don't know if he saw me, and I was too fast to follow or what, but I didn't ever see him again. I immediately pulled out my phone and put it on the charger and called the guys back to let them know I was okay. But Sinji never, ever let me walk home alone in the dark again. When this happened, I was around 13 years old. To understand this story better, I will have to explain a couple of things first. At the time, I attended a school that was for students who were 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. Kids from 10 to 13 years old, mostly. Once you go to the 8th grade, you had to go to a school located beside the one I was in. I was in 7th grade. Although I was friends with many of the people at the school, I wasn't very popular because I hated to be the center of attention, so I wasn't used to people having a crush on me. Now, when you leave the school, if you turn left, there are some bus stops, which are made of metal, so if you're inside or behind one, no one can see you. On the way to the bus stop, it's possible to see a road by your side. If you go through that road, you end up at a candy store that I'd used to go to all the time. The road was normally very quiet, and almost no one would pass there, especially at night. And it was all bumpy, so you couldn't really run in there. And worse than that, there were many alleys along the road. So, there was this one time when I and two of my friends decided to go to the candy shop. After buying some candies and some sodas, we were climbing the road to go back to school. We then passed through the two guys who were yelling down the road. Well, I've seen these guys at our school a few times. They are 1 year below us. They were kind of popular for being bad boys, I guess. You know, the type of guys who smoke and skip class. Then, one of the guys, let's call him Manny, said, "Hi," to us. My friends ignored him, but I, being the kind and cheerful person that I am, said hi back. The guys then started giggling and whispering to each other while continuing down the street. I didn't pay much attention to it and continued on my way back to the school. A couple of days later, I began to notice Manny would always be around the places where I was. Not near me, but close by. Note that he never ever talked to me aside from that first hi. I wouldn't pay much attention at first, but the school was very big, so it wouldn't be a coincidence that he'd just be there. I then decided to test him. When I saw him around, I'd ask my friends to start running from one place to another, and surprise, surprise, he'd run to the exact place where we'd run, but at a safe distance. If it wasn't for my great capacity of noticing small things, I'd never have noticed this. Some more days passed, and although I was a bit creeped out by him, I learned to get used to him always following me around. He'd also send me lots of messages through Facebook, although we weren't friends on there. I never responded to him, but he wouldn't give up and kept sending messages, so I blocked him. But what made me completely freak out was this one episode. I used to attend after-school sports that were normally from 5 p.m. to 6, sometimes even 7. So, once the sport was over, it'd be nighttime already, and I would be outside in the dark. I used to attend badminton classes with this one friend of mine. I attended these classes since the beginning of the year. Our gym was divided into two. One half where the badminton class was happening, and the other would be the futsal class, which is like soccer but inside a gym. Us badminton players never had much contact with the futsal players, aside from the balls landing in our half once or twice. I never saw Manny attending futsal classes, but he started to after that high exchange. Then, when he began to attend futsal classes, much more balls began to land in our half of the gym, and he'd always be the one to come get it. At this time, I was starting to get angry because first, he took away my relaxing break times with my friends at school, and now he was taking away my only time I had to play my favorite sport. But the scary part begins now. One day at the end of the sports practice, my friend and I were leaving the changing room. The girls' changing room exit leads right outside, so you don't have to get inside the smelly gym again after you get out of there. So, once you leave the changing room, there'd be a normal rock path that led back to the school's main building, and there'd also be a small wall, like a really small wall, only about 1 meter high, with plants and dirt on top of it. So my friend and I were leaving the changing room, and sitting on the wall, waiting for us, were Manny and his friend. Let me remind you that we never talked to them aside from that one high exchange. So, why would they be waiting for us? We brushed it off as them just killing time sitting in there before going to the main building. So, when they stopped their conversation to look at me, I gave them a disgusted look and started to make my way to the main building while pulling my friend along. Once I did this, they got up and started walking very close to us. I started to get scared. They had never followed us this close before, and it was nighttime, and there was no one at school. Teachers and most of the school staff had already left. I then had an idea. I said loudly to my friend, "Oh, we're late. My mom will kill me if we don't hurry." We then sprinted out of the school. I could see Manny and his friend running behind us. Luckily, my friend and I were faster, so we left the school and walked to the bus stops. We thought about running to the dark road and hiding in an alley, but then we looked at the bus stop and we saw some of our friends there. We ran to them and explained what happened, that one of my friends told us to hide on the bus stop. Sure enough, seconds later, Manny and his friend arrived at the bus stop. They asked our friend if he had seen us, and my friend proceeded to tell him we went into the dark road to go to the candy shop. Manny then said, "Good," with a smirk, and he and his friend ran down the road. We thanked our friend and went away in the opposite direction. Even after this happened, I didn't tell my parents nor any adults. I thought they would think this was a normal thing for a boy to do, since he had a crush or something. I never had anyone liking me before though, so although I was uncomfortable, I also thought it might be normal. Another thing that made me not tell anyone was the fact that I was going to change the school besides the one, so I didn't think it would really be a big deal. I was going to be leaving schools. But even though I changed schools next year, I kept seeing him sometimes outside, since he wasn't allowed in. So I began to only get out of school when I was sure my mother was already waiting for me outside. During my 8th grade, I began to get scared. He would finish 7th grade soon, so that meant he was going to my school. But during my 8th grade, I got into some problems with my friends. I was bullied, so I developed depression and I became suicidal. And when my parents found out about this, they thought changing schools was the best option. So I didn't have to worry about Manny anymore. The reason I am writing this is recently I was at the train station. It was my first time going by myself on the train, and I was sitting on a bench at the train station waiting for the train while reading my fan fiction on my phone. Then, I noticed a guy on the ticket machine on the other side of the station. He looked familiar, so I waited for him to turn so I could see his face, and sure enough, it was Manny. I instantly got scared, especially because I was alone. Fortunately for me, I had changed a lot in 2 years. I changed the way I used my hair, I changed my style, and I lost a couple of pounds due to my depression. I was completely different, so I prayed for him not to recognize me. I'm not sure if he did or not. He stayed on the other side of the station the whole time, since he was taking a different train than I was, so I felt safer, but he kept glancing at me and talking on the phone with someone while giggling. When my train arrived, I made sure he didn't follow me. Then, once I got home, I decided to tell my older sister about the whole story. I have never told her, so I wanted her to give me her opinion. When I finished telling her the story, she was creeped out and said to be extra careful from now on. My sister is and always will be very protective of me, so I'm not sure if she's exaggerating. I still don't know if this is normal, but to this day, I keep thinking, what if that night my friend and I decided to go down to the road instead of explaining to our friends the situation? Would my friend think the guys were our friends and pointed them into the right direction, or would they have caught up with us on the dark road anyway? I don't know. I was about 10 years old living in the Northeast. One afternoon, I was walking home from school when I saw a man up the road ahead of me, walking toward the sidewalk. My mind was sort of wandering in space, so I barely even took notice of him. He had a slight limp, which made him stand out from the background of my daydreaming. I kept walking. His path began to converge with mine. I didn't react. I also didn't see the cloth bag in his hand until he was right next to me, throwing it over my head. I felt the bag cinch around my neck and a strong jerk as he swept me off my feet. Within seconds, he had thrown me into the back of his van and was driving down the road again as if nothing had ever happened. My body immediately began to ache from the trauma of being tossed around like a rag doll and left unsecured on the cold, metal floor of a moving vehicle. Stunned by the sudden attack, it was several minutes before I began screaming and crying as the realization set in. I had been kidnapped, and I was not going to see my family again. I felt my chest crushing in at that thought. A moment after my fit of crying started, I felt the gravity shift under me as the van pulled over onto what sounded like the shoulder of a highway. The man got up from his seat, pulled up the hood of my head, and shoved a rag into my mouth. I thought he would never stop driving. It felt like days that went by as burning sensations raced through my joints and bones as they pressed against the unpadded frame of the van. We finally stopped. I could hear voices chattering, muffled by thin walls of the vehicle. I was held in a normal-looking house a couple of hundred miles away from my home. After a few weeks, I realized what I had to do to survive. I won't get too far into the details, but for several months, I was tortured and abused. Physically, emotionally, sexually. Everything I did was closely monitored. Eating, sleeping, going to the bathroom, everything. It wasn't long before that became my life. My kidnapper was a fixed, permanent character in my story. The man with the limp. He was a bald-headed man with heavy scarring on his scalp and face as if he had been in a lot of fights. He had one green eye and one blue. Whenever he wore a short-sleeved shirt, a tattoo was visible on his forearm, a stylized font that spelled out the name Annabelle. My middle and last names were inscribed in his skin as well. Every time I saw it, I felt sick to my stomach. By avoiding making him mad or stepping out of line, I eventually gained enough of his trust to be allowed to walk around the house and get food when I was hungry without him watching me. The tense air of mutual distrust that dominated the first few months seemed to fade into a twisted feeling of normalcy. One day he showed me his room. There were pictures of me all over the walls. Many were from time being held as captive, but also were prepped from photos taken before I was even kidnapped. He had pictures of me walking outside, pictures of me sleeping in my room. It took every fiber of my will to avoid breaking down in front of him as the rush of memories of my former life came crashing down on me. I wanted to go home so badly, but I couldn't let him know that, especially when he was beginning to open up and trust me. Thank God I was smart enough to know that. A few weeks later, I was able to convince him to take me shopping with him. The one condition was that I would have to hold his hand the entire time. While we were out, he had to go to the bathroom. He made me promise to stay put while we went in. As soon as he was out of sight, I ran as fast as I could. Frantically searching the aisles of the grocery store, I grabbed the first person I could find and told her I'd been kidnapped, begging her to call the police. The police arrived very quickly and were able to arrest him. I told them my address and they eventually had someone take me to my house finally. The officers that drove me home told me that the man's name was Brian. I told him I had never seen him before, that day he took me away. Little did I know, he'd been watching me for 2 years. It took me a while to get past the whole ordeal, but just so you know, I'm fine now. Just a little bit paranoid. But now, the story I originally wanted to tell you, it's directly related to this, and by the way, I'm sorry if this is dragging on a bit. About a year or so had passed since I was returned home. I was 12, back in my routine life in my country where my parents and I lived. My best friend Beth was staying with us due to some family issues, so she and I walked everywhere together. I was usually barefoot, keeping a sharp eye out for snakes or broken glass along the dirt roads. One day, my mom let us walk the nearest gas station to get ice and pop for our cookout we were planning. Mind you, the station was only about 50 yards away from my house, so it basically was an earshot of my backyard. When we got close to the store, Beth grabbed my hand and whispered to me, "Walk faster." I figured she was just getting tired of being out in the hot sun, so I picked up the pace. We walked around the store a few times looking at ice cream and energy drinks. Standard behavior for a couple of rebel kids. We got everything we needed for the barbecue, plus a couple of extra push pops for ourselves. As we made our way back home, Beth grabs my hand again, this time shaking with fear written all over her face. She's only 10 years old, by the way. Just then I looked over my shoulder to see a man briskly walking behind us. My mind went into overdrive, calculating what to do amid flashes of my recent, horrible past. I told Beth to get my phone out and text my mom to let her know what was happening. I pulled out a knife out of my back pocket and held it to my side, making sure the man saw it. He slowed his pace once the blade came out. Once he backed off, I told Beth not to bother with the text, as we were almost home. When we arrived, the cookout went as normal. We helped prepare the food and ate with the family, eventually forgetting about the brief scare we had had. We even changed into our swimming clothes and splashed around in the creek afterward. About an hour of playing around in the water, I felt a sharp tug on my shirt. Beth pulled me close to her, pointing up to the nearby bridge. "Sissy, the man is back." I looked up at the bridge and felt my lungs flood with air as I had no choice but to gasp. I recognized the man as the same one who had kidnapped me before. I scooped Beth up and we ran home, hand in hand. She kept asking me who that man was, and not having the heart to tell her the whole truth, I simply said I didn't trust him. I don't for the life of me know why I didn't call the police right then and there. When we got home, a sense of safety came over me, and I immediately felt I could relax. Within the hour, we were in my room watching a movie. The phone rang and I answered it. A familiar voice responded,
"You're my baby doll. You belong to me. Don't run from me, girl. You can't hide from me. Remember, you are always going to be my..." What?
I hung up the phone. My heart was in my throat. I threw the phone into the laundry basket, screaming at him. Beth asked if I was okay, and I just told her it was a friend being an ass. I walked downstairs to make sure the doors and windows were all locked. I eventually went to sleep. Around 3 a.m., I was startled awake by the sound of my front door being busted open, followed by several voices yelling, "Police!" I heard their footsteps running all throughout my house until they finally made it to my bedroom. They checked in my closets, behind my door, and they ended up pulling a man out from under my bed. It was one of the most traumatic moments of my life, and the feeling of being watched has never completely left me. I've wanted to tell this story for so long, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. Thanks for helping me share this story. I hope this can help someone avoid going through what happened to me. I had to learn the hard way that not all companies do a complete background check on new employees. About 10 years ago, I was working at a group home for 5 high-functioning, mentally disabled men. Each of the men is assigned direct care staff to help out with everyday life outside of work and when they are at home in the evenings. The men range from a little over 21 to early 50s. These men are unable to properly feed themselves or live a normal life outside of assistance. Only one of the younger men, Doug, needed assistance with the shower since he was the lowest functioning. Tommy was a short, hairy, squat man in his late 30s with inappropriate comments to female direct staff. Walter was in his early 40s and had the tendency to lie, a touch of a rare temper, and enjoyed winding up the other clients. Rick Chain smoked like a demon, lied a lot, and had a small temper too. Then there was Roland, over 6.5 feet tall, gangly, violent toward all females, and known to tear out hair. Each of the gentlemen has their own bedrooms, for those curious. 3 years into the job, and a guy named Corey was hired. We all discovered he had a sick wife at home, and he seemed pretty nice. I did nothing to encourage him, but it wasn't long before Corey was trying to keep all our clients in the same rooms to talk to me. I got the creeps, then asked for an opposite schedule to his own. He still worked the shifts with me despite the request. Then he started stalking me to the grocery store that turned out to be near his apartment. After a few days of him being there after our shifts ended, I was wigged out. One evening, he followed me home completely before I had realized. I reported the incidents and wasn't taken too seriously. I bleached my hair to a pale white the day before a huge meeting for work and kept my head down. I had told Allie and another close coworker about it and was believed by them because the idiot was asking where I was before the meeting. He finally spots me, tries to engage in a conversation after the meeting, and I told the assistant manager. He brushes it off until Allie told him about how Corey just followed me to the van with Rick even though Corey wasn't on duty. Corey was immediately pulled aside and explicitly told to leave me alone. Thankfully, they started listening, but it was too late in many ways. Corey's behavior toward me pressed the managers to look further into his past. It was discovered that a year prior he did time raping a 17-year-old girl. To make matters worse, he had been corrupting the clients during trusted graveyard shifts in the house for months. He subjected Roland, Rick, and Walter to some hardcore pornography. He was fired shortly after. Last I knew, he was on the loose. He lives a state away, but I wish there was more distance. Roland became more violent with the female direct care staff after the exposure and began to corner me after the pornographic stuff. This led me to barely getting into the bathroom before Roland was able to tear a lot of my hair out. I had to climb out the window and demanded the staff get their client, plus put in my notice the next day. I'm 17 and I'm from Australia, and this is my stalking. So something you need to know about me. I look older than I really am. I honestly look like I'm 18 or 19, and that's with a bare minimum makeup on. But yet, if I have a lot of makeup on, I can look like I'm even 21 sometimes. So, I take two trains as well as a bus to get from school to home. So, of course, I caught the bus and two trains like I normally do every day. But yet, before I got on the bus, I changed out of my school uniform and into a tank top, shorts, and black boots/heels. Because of a couple of years ago I had friends that nearly got abducted on public transport, we both believed that it was because of their school uniforms. If she wasn't then, the a-hole would have tried to abduct her and wouldn't have even noticed her, so that's why I always get changed after school. So I got on the bus. I didn't have anyone with me obviously because I'm a loner, and I honestly don't like a lot of company. I just like to be by myself and read. So the bus that I was on reached the train station. I got ready to get off and got on the fifth platform for the train that I was catching. The train arrived and I got on, and after two stops I got off and went to the second platform to wait for my next train. As I was waiting, I was looking at all the people that I might be on the same carriage as. As I was looking around, there was this guy. He locked eyes with me for about a second, and then I looked away. He was wearing a black hoodie and gray sweatpants. He seemed like he was in his late 20s or early 30s. He really didn't seem harmful at first, but yet, he didn't really seem harmless either, if that makes any sense. The train arrived and I got on the last carriage like I always did, because the end carriage was always less crowded. And apparently, Black Hoodie Guy had the same idea, because he followed me to the last carriage and got on as well. I never liked sitting on the seats on trains, because you never know who has been on them, or what has been on them. So I just stand, and guess what? Black Hoodie Guy stood right next to me and was occasionally glancing over at me, which really had me annoyed, but yet I was just pretending that I didn't even see what he was doing and just started playing on my phone, which, to my dismay, was nearly dead. Of course it was, because I used it too much in class. The train came to a stop, and I got off since it was my stop, and you guessed it, so did Black Hoodie Guy. Then, that's when it hit me. I had to walk home that day because my mother was at the hospital visiting friends, so she couldn't pick me up from the station. As I was walking, I glanced behind me and what do you know, Black Hoodie Guy is still following me. He sees that I notice him, but yet he doesn't do anything about it. I then grab my phone out of my back pocket and try to contact a friend of mine just to make sure I can calm myself down slightly, but yet no one was answering. This day was just getting worse and worse by the minute. I could feel his eyes burning into the back of my head, and I could see him out of my peripheral vision as I rounded a slight corner, and he was about 30 feet behind me. At this point, he had been following me for about 10 to 15 minutes, and I had had enough, so I took out my phone in my pocket and called one of my friends, and obviously they didn't answer, but I didn't really care because all I wanted to do was for this guy to get the point and leave me alone, because I wasn't playing games anymore. I didn't look behind me for about 2 minutes, and when I did, he was gone. So I quickened my pace and just hoped that he wouldn't pop out anywhere and take me. Never seen him again before that day. Until this day, I have not seen him since. Thanks for listening to these creepy, allegedly true stories sent in by viewers just like you. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button, as it helps me out a ton. I know these aren't the typical stories I read, and it would help me out a ton if you could hit that like button. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a story like this or something completely different, be sure to submit it at swampdeller.net or the email you could find in the description down below. It would be my honor to share one of your stories on the show. It's stories like yours that keep this channel going. If you didn't know, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on Spotify, iTunes, Podbean, and pretty much every other major podcasting website out there. Thanks as always for supporting the Swamp, my friends, and I'll see you soon with another creepy video. Oh, and if you made it all the way to the end, let's comment something down below. Comment Scattershot to let me know that you made it to the very end.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.